Dark Wreath Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn semester 2009, this is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 7. Lecture 1, delivered on August 18, 2009. The title of this lecture is Introduction to Finance.
Today, Introduction to Finance. This course has to do with managerial finance, which is one of three areas of finance. And I'm going to be very honest with you right now that these areas are blurred much more than how your textbook presents it. Really, in the real world, these three subject areas, just they're always interacting with each other. But look, this class is about managerial finance. That is the finance internal to the company, the analysis of cash flows in and out, and the projection of cash flows, the valuation of products that the company, projects that the company is undertaking, the consideration of best financing vehicles internally. It is internal to the company. That's managerial finance. Now, the second area of finance has to do with capital markets, how the money is brought in to the company. Now, interestingly enough, if you read the first chapter, there's something, or and the second chapter too, there's something interesting. The book talks about the authors of the book talk about well, we got these different ways. We could raise money through selling stock. We could raise money through debt. Well, here's an interesting one that they kind of miss. It's a kind of minor one. You can also bring money into the company through selling your damn product. And as a matter of fact, that's the way we, you know, the old traditional way. But hey, it's a new era. But the actually that internally generated equity, what we call what you get after you've paid your bills from all the money you take in, as far as sales go, that's your primary long-term going concern base of cash inflow. But we but there are other sources of capital, and so the second area of finance studies the capital markets in terms of the financial institutions and the ways and means by which those financial institutions come to bear to provide intermediary services to the company. The third area of finance is investments, stocks, bonds, buying, selling, valuing, securities, trading, and all that kind of stuff. Now, as I pointed out, these are actually very related fields, because, I mean, if I am an internal project analyst looking at the cash flows of the company, then I certainly need to know, well, I've got a brilliant idea. It'll for this project, it'll bring us buttloads of money. That's a technical term, buttloads of money. It'll bring us a lot of money. Well, it's going to cost $1 billion, but hey, you see, you've got to have some sense of what is capable of being delivered by the capital markets. And sometimes understanding the capital markets means that you have to also understand the macroeconomic environment for what are the conditions of credit out there. How easy is it? What is the cost of the of credit? So it certainly on my project would be, I would need to have some grasp of the capital markets and what was available within those capital markets. Investments. Now, it's a little bit simplistic, but almost exactly accurate, that a company is actually nothing but a portfolio of its projects. And the same valuation techniques that we apply to figure out what a project is worth is what we use in securities analysis. You'll see it, the same essential calculations are used. So to a large extent, if I'm talking about investments, really what the biggest investment a company has is in the projects that it undertakes. Those investments will cost money, just like a stock would that you would buy. And then they will bring in money just like a stock would through dividends and capital gains. So it's just like a stock would. So we certainly cannot pretend that these fields are unrelated. So in this managerial finance course, I will be stepping out from just pure sitting there at the table analyzing the net present value of future expected cash flows from a project, and I will be talking about these other aspects of finance with you. It is a wide, broad field, a lot of opportunities in there for if one part of the field bores the hell out of you, then I can find at least some other one that won't bore the hell out of you as much. So one of the things that I do want to do in this course is step out and show you the different aspects of this course, of this discipline, so that you know that if you're bored by the managerial part, you also know that there are other parts of this too. As a matter of fact, I was just talking last week with one of the an executive at one of the big companies here in town, and he actually handles the credit markets, but he is at virtually every financial management meeting because they all have to work together. He said, all right, this is the interest rate environment. Okay, that's the interest rate environment, so that means that that impacts on the value of our cash flows that are going to come in the future. Now, here's a problem. And I don't like fighting with a book and saying, oh, the book is wrong and all that. But if the book is wrong, if I say something different from the book, wait a minute, let me make sure we are on the same page. If the book and I disagree, who's right?
You.
You are an intellectual colossus. Yes. Yes. The book gives this clearly, and I'm glad to see this, that finance is a combination of economics and, unfortunately, the book says accounting. That's not exactly right. We have to use accounting numbers. We certainly, and you're going to use accounting financial statements in this class. I'm going to teach you how to read them, how to break them apart, and put them back together again for our purposes. But really, accounting is not what we need, accounting numbers. Accounting numbers are historical numbers. Accounting numbers are documented numbers. And in finance, we cannot look at the past. We are economists at heart. As a matter of fact, I describe myself. I am a financial economist. Here's the thing. You made an investment, sir, of $100 10 years ago in a stock. Today, you're deciding whether you should buy or sell or hold that stock. Buy more of that stock, sell that stock, or hold that stock. Where does that $100 you spent 10 years ago fit into your analysis today? Come on, use your gut. Use your gut. I want you to look in your pocket. Do you have $100? You're saying you already spent it? Yeah, you don't have $100. No, you don't. That $100, it's died. It went home. It's with Jesus now. It's gone forever. All that matters to your investment decision right now is what the future prospects of that stock are. Nothing about that $100 is there. Even the stain in your pants from the ink on it is washed away, provided you wash. You do wash your... I'm good. No, good. Look, let's say, woman, you. You're in the library late at night. You accidentally got locked in. You know it's going to be one of those stupid slasher horror movies coming. But there's nothing you can do about it. So you, of course, according to the script that you read, well, I'm supposed to walk upstairs where it's really dark, like a stupid ass. You know, where the walls are saying, go out. And you stumble in this room, and there's all these old newspapers on the floor, and you stumble over one. And you say, well, I might as well look through these. You know, any minute now, the slasher's going to come in and carve me up with a Ginsu knife and a Vegematic. So let me read what the songs are. And you're looking at this newspaper, 1948. And there in this paper, this is a business paper, and it's talking about this company that's got this incredible invention they've been working on, they've been using it in the military, and now they're talking about maybe someday they're going to be able to make consumer versions of it. It's called a computer. And this company is International Business Machines. Well, you just suddenly, you're, whoa, spank me Jesus. I am going to call my broker, buy IBM. They're going to make a computer. I read it in this paper. What's wrong with that logic? What's wrong with it? Do you suppose anyone already has bought the stock because they were going to build a computer? What do you suppose happened to the price as people bought the stock? What happened to the price of the stock as demand surged for it? Exactly. Yeah. And so you're saying that the price of the stock has already impounded that information. See, that's the way efficient markets work. You can't beat the market. You know information that is that old, it's not going to do a bit of good. No one, it's useless. You see, the past doesn't matter to us. Do you ever read, say, Stephen King books? Have you any of you ever read Stephen King? Remember one called The Langoliers? You remember The Langoliers? What were The Langoliers? They came back and they were coming to eat the past. And these people got stuck in the past and they saw The Langoliers coming. You see, we are always in finance watching The Langoliers eat the past. You see, the past means nothing to us. Now, we can look at the past for trends and for tea leaves, but everyone else is doing that too. You think you can beat a market? You think any of you, you think I could? You have got billions of trades run by companies that have access. Literally, I have been in some of my friends' offices where their walls were lined with monitors. And they were one of millions of these people around the world pouring information, pouring at them, trading on that. You can't beat that. No. The past doesn't tell us much. Now, unless you have some genius in you. Now, within a company's environment, you can certainly look at the past data, that historical data. But there's another problem with historical data, accounting data. Accountants, by the laws that govern them, by the rules, by general accepted accounting standards and principles, must have documented costs. But let me do this real quick. You're going to be in this class 3 hours a week. For every hour in this class, you should be studying 2 hours. So that puts you 9 hours a week for 16 weeks in this class. That's 144 hours you are spending in this class, on this class. Let's see, what can you make? If you are working a job, $10 an hour, okay, $8 an hour. No, let's say $10 an hour, okay? $10 an hour. You say, well, I'm not working a job, I'm in here. No, but that is the next best alternative to what you're doing here. There are a lot of things you could be doing. You could be out there, you know, enjoying playing World of Warcraft. You could be out there pumping iron. You could be out there pumping, you could be out there doing a lot of things. Shut up. Okay? Really? But you see, the point that I'm trying to make here is that the best alternative you have, what is an economic, do you remember the term in economics for that? The cost of the best foregone alternative, what is it? Oh, I love it when you talk dirty like that to me. Dinner and dancing later. Yes. $10 an hour? You think your tuition and fees are bad here? This is your opportunity cost of being in this class, listening to me scream and fart at you. $1,440. That's indirect cost. There is no receipt for it. But it damn well affects you. I can tell you right now, I love my self-recessions. You know, because that's when all the students come. If times are good, if you were making $80 an hour, would you be in my class? Yeah, no, don't give me that. You would say, bye, teacher. You'd be gone. But when times are bad, people go to college because this opportunity cost per hour goes down. You look at Walmart. You ever been to Walmart? I hate Walmart, but I go there. You got to go through, it's cheap prices, but you go through the parking lot. First, you have to not be run over by some moron in a giant truck that's got a license plate, bumper sticker that says, my wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never. And then you walk into the store, and you hear, hi, and you look around, oh, God, they're hiring dwarfs as greeters. And then you have to walk down the aisles where these fat asses stand there talking on their cell phones, beating their kids. And I just stand there, go for it. And then you stand in a line for 30 minutes. In front of you is a snot-nosed kid just staring at you. 15 people up, there's Granny using her debit card for the first time.
Oh, that was 15 times and it still doesn't work. Here, maybe I got some change in my pocket. Oh, goodness, there's so much change down in the box.
Hurry up, Granny, you're going to die before you eat! Long lines. If you make $10 an hour, 30 minutes in a line has an opportunity cost of just $5. But if you work at State Barn and make $50 an hour, what does that half hour in that line cost? $25. That's why the yuppies will go to Schnucks, because they'll pay the higher prices and avoid the long lines. Opportunity cost drives decision making far more than the direct cost. As a matter of fact, direct cost is oftentimes created by opportunity cost. Schnucks charges higher prices because they don't want the riffraff at their store. Walmart charges the low prices because they want me to come there. Aldi's is even better on prices. I don't go to Aldi's. Aldi's puts the food on the floor. I don't want my damn food on the floor. You see, they say, here's your damn food on the box. And then they kick it over there. You put your foot on the kicks, man. God. But do you understand? Opportunity cost drives. I was teaching at a private university here some years back. I won't mention the name of this private university here. But we had a night when the mayor of the big city came to tout her dream of a sports arena back before the Boondoggle was built. And she wanted, and we had this, I was supposed to bring all of my finance students. You know, all of you, we're all going to have a night listening to the mayor, and we're all going to sit there. Of course, they all sit there being really prim and proper. They're proto-yuppies, you know, they go out afterwards and get wasted. But there they looked really prim and proper. And the mayor of the town brought her city manager, the financial analyst. She had him on a leash. Come on, boy, sit. And she told us all about the grand, wonderful things that were going to happen with this incredible arena there that was going to be built. This city was going to be able to capture people around the city in a 60-mile radius. Well, who am I kidding? In a 60-mile radius around the city. And all this, and then the financial analyst comes up, and he starts showing the numbers, the costs, and the calculation of the present value of the future expected cash flows. The whole nine yards, very cool. And he said, do we have any questions? And you could hear crickets chirping. All the students were just sitting there. I think some of them knew. But of course, the other faculty members there, they were, you know, sitting there, when's dinner? When do we get our free dinner? And I held up my hand and I said, sir, where's the cost of the land? And he looked at me and said, oh, we own the land. I looked at him. I gave him that professorial scowl. You own the land. And he knew right away I was going to eat his ass. You own the land so you don't have to use it in your calculation of the cost of the project? Really? What can you do with the land if you don't use it in that project? Come on, man. Sell it. You can sell it. You can rent it. Opportunity cost. It doesn't matter whether you own it or not. If you use it for something, it is an opportunity cost because you don't use it for something else. If I've got a new project and I have to bring you, you're already with the company, I bring you onto this project, you become a cost. Well, you're part of the company. Yeah, and I've also lost you to what you were doing. So now you're a cost in my project. You see how economic concepts drive financial decision making. So many stories we can tell about projects that looked incredible on paper that went to hell in a handbasket. And a lot of it is because no one looked at all of the opportunity costs. Look at this calculation right here. Look at what I did right there. The opportunity cost dominates. And that's what's going to be true in a lot of the situations that we are in. Look, finance is a field of rationality. We have to assume rational human behavior. Just like in economics, we may have bounded rationality, we may not have all the information we want, but we have to assume that markets are rational and our competitors are rational and the universe is rational at the end of the day. And everyone works by greed. I don't care about intentions. I must act on capabilities of my opponents, of the markets. And that rationality drives all human action. When you go into business, you're a bread maker. You're the only bread maker in town. You can charge a huge price for your bread. No one else in town makes bread. Why are you charging a huge price? Because you can. And you can also be a slob. Putting flour into the bowl. I just charge more. You can hire your lazy ass brother here. All he does is sit around when the pretty girls come in. Hey, lady, you want to buy my loaf of bread? And they have to say yes because there's no other bread in town. Well, you see, have you ever met someone who just had too much money? The kind of, you know, the rich kid in high school who needed a swirly really bad. Right. Bill Gates, you know, that kind of guy. Someone's going to come in. I can do this more efficiently. I just use my resources more efficiently and I can charge a lower price. I think that's static efficiency, just using your existing resources more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Now, you do that. The reason you're doing it is not because you love yourself, them customers. Now, we always say that. We are in business to provide a quality product because we love the human race. Oh, bullshit. We're in business to make money. You're doing that to make money, and you've created an ecstatic efficiency, not because of your love of the world, but because of your greed, your dirty greed. God bless you. Well, you see, he's now making buttloads of money. Again, see that technical term? Buttloads of money. So you say, now, wait a minute. Yeah, he's brought all the efficiencies down. He's really efficient. But there's got to be a way. I'll find a new technology. Technology is nothing but the combination of factors of production. And you find a technology that does it cheaper than he does. That's dynamic efficiency. And you're doing it so that you can charge, so that your costs are lower, so that you can charge a lower price and take his business away from him. And you're doing this to these people. You do it to him, you do it to him. Not because you love yourself, this world, and all of its consumers, but because you want to drive him out of business, send him into bankruptcy, and make their kids go to Heartland Community College and then Illinois State University. Oh God, I'm podcasting this. And you see, there's something else along the way, too. It's not just about the bread. I want you to imagine. You've got your bread, you got your technology, you put up a sign, my bread tastes like ass. Well, no one's going to buy ass bread. You try to take some mom takes her kid, no, mommy, I don't want that bread, that bread tastes like butt. Oh, shut up, there are kids in China who'd love to have an ass sandwich right about now. You're not going to sell ass bread unless you're really good at niche marketing. You're going to have to sell a product that the consumer likes if you want to sell it to them. And again, it has nothing to do with whether you love yourself, those customers, or not. It has to do with the fact that you're greedy. Greed drives efficiency. Greed drives technological innovation. Holding hands and singing Kumbaya, we're all one. We are the world. That's not how you make money. That's not how a capitalist system works. And if you think capitalism is a dirty word, you definitely do not belong in business. Capitalism is the driving force that has brought this world to a state that people would not even 100 years ago have believed. It was because of the greed. It was because of the rationality of people looking out for their own interests. As one of my great gurus said, love your family, love your God, crush your competitors into the ground. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.